Liebe Freunde und Kollegen, ich werde ja manchmal gefragt, wie dieser Podcast entstanden ist oder wie ich auf die Idee gekommen bin, überhaupt einen Podcast zu starten. Und einer der Gründe ist tatsächlich einer der Gäste, die ich in diesem Podcast jetzt dabei hatte, und zwar Serhat Köken. Ich habe ihn nämlich auf Facebook verfolgt und fand es immer schon super spannend, was für Fälle er gepostet hat. Und er ist ja auch ein echt guter Zahnarzt, der richtig gut mit Komposit umgehen kann. Und zum Beispiel immer, wenn dann auch mir Patienten erzählen, sie machen das irgendwie in der Türkei, da ist alles billiger oder das wurde in der Türkei gemacht, dann denke ich mir immer so, aber du warst nicht bei Serhat. Und das Spannende ist, dass er zu Gast bei einem Podcast war. Denn gleichzeitig habe ich auch Arthur Volker gefolgt und der hat dann gesagt, dass er Alan Mead vom Dental Hacks Podcast, der ist ja jetzt Very Dental Podcast, überzeugt hat, dann auch mal ein paar internationale Leute einzuladen. Und darunter war Serhat Köken. Und dann habe ich dann quasi auch noch seine Geschichte gehört, wie er so ein bisschen bei der Armee war und wie das so war mit Zahnmedizin. Das fand ich ganz spannend. Und ich fand es auch viel spannender. Das war dann auch mein erster Kontakt zu dentalen Podcasts überhaupt. Und ich fand es spannend, wie der Alan Mead das gemacht hat, wie er dann quasi auch, wie offen und locker er darüber gesprochen hat, über das Thema. Und zum Beispiel eine Sache ist mir im Kopf geblieben, weil der hatte zum Beispiel mal in der Folge haben sie so ein bisschen über iPads geredet und so nach dem Motto, ja, und dann meinte eine Zahnärztin, ja, die iPads waren so günstig, kosten ja nur $1,000 Stück, da habe ich gleich für jedes Zimmer eins gekauft. Also so Sachen, die man den typischen deutschen Zahnarzt auch nicht hören würde, dass er sowas sagt. Da würde es erst heißen, ja, ich habe lange überlegt und mit dem Steuerberater gesprochen und dann haben wir uns dann doch dafür entschieden, für jedes Zimmer ein iPad zu kaufen und das können die Mitarbeiter dann nach Hause nehmen oder weiß ich was. Und das sind so alles so Sachen, das fand ich schon total spannend und dann habe ich dann quasi diesen Podcast verschlungen und dachte auch, es wäre cool, wenn es auch einen deutschen Podcast für Zahnärzte geben würde. So ein bisschen wie die Dental Hacks. Darüber habe ich mich auch ein bisschen mit Jöran damals unterhalten und deshalb habe ich mit Jöran damals den Podcast begonnen. Er ist ja leider nach Leipzig gezogen dann, sodass es schwieriger war, dass wir zusammen den Podcast machen konnten. Aber ich freue mich immer wieder, wenn wir beide mal Zeit finden und eine Folge aufnehmen können. Und ich hoffe auch, dass 2022 wir das vielleicht auch wieder öfter schaffen, wenn ein paar widrige Umstände dementsprechend weniger da sind. Jedenfalls wünsche ich euch viel Spaß beim Hören der Folge. Es geht so ein bisschen um Komposit-Injektionstechnik. Kostas ist ein Zahnarzt aus London, der dafür sehr bekannt ist, währenddessen Serhat ja eher bekannt ist für die direkte Technik, obwohl er auch mit der Komposit-Injektionstechnik schon gearbeitet hat. Die beiden haben auch ein spannendes Webinar gehabt jetzt beim GC Dental Campus im Rahmen des 100-Jahr-Symposiums. Das ist ein guter Teaser, um rauszufinden, was das für eine Technik ist, wo die, inwieweit die spannend ist. Und ich wünsche euch einfach viel Spaß beim Hören und vielen Dank an GC Europe, dass sie quasi diese Podcast-Serie unterstützt haben. Welcome to today's show. I'm connected to Serhat Köken and Kostas. Guys, I'm really glad that you both are here online with me. How are you guys?
Thank you. I'm fine.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us. Thanks for the invite.
You two are having a lecture together for the GC November Symposium. It's a really interesting topic because, Kostas, you are kind of known for direct composites. And Kostas, you are known for injection molding. And you're going to talk about this topic. Will you like each other after the lecture? Or?
Good point. Actually, we don't know what's going to happen at the end of this, but we're going to almost fight, but in a good dental way, in a civilized way. So I'm going to be on my corner. And Serhat, what do you think?
I think they will enjoy. We plan something different. It will be a really interesting conversation.
But Kostas, one question. Are you don't doing any direct composites in the anteriors anymore, just injection molding?
I'm happy you're asking me this because I'm giving a workshop, a lecture tomorrow for GC UK on injection molding. And I just updated my presentation. And at the disadvantages, at the limitations, I wrote down de-skilling. I messaged Serhat 2 days ago that you lose your skills a little bit because I had to do something freehand. And okay, I've got my very good flat plastics and my beautiful kind of accords and essentials. And I had to really think. It wasn't just natural. So do everything in moderation, including injection molding, because freehand is the king and will always be the king. So I've been doing it a lot, the injection molding, and I have to be a little bit careful because you need to have the excellent freehand skills. So I have to do a bit of 50-50 from now on. Yes, I agree.
Serhat, you also tried out the injection molding. I mean, there's this really educational video you produced with Exaclear. Basically, if someone asks me how does Exaclear work, I just show him this video and that's it.
At that time, I tried to take a video several times. I failed maybe more than 15. I think Kostas knows. This is not that easy. They think that, oh, it's really simple. Just you get the impression with the Exaclear, and then you just inject the composite. However, it is that difficult, like taking impression with an Exaclear sometimes is a disaster, that you lose your time, material, and you go back and restart taking the impression. And that video was amazing because by chance, I don't know, we made something really interesting, and it was viewed on Facebook more than 828,000 times on Xerodonto. So yes, people think that I'm doing injection molding so often. However, it's not true. I'm doing mostly directs, as you see.
I already kind of had a small workshop with you at the IDS 2017, I think. You're like a master with the brush. Kostas mentioned that he's using flat plastics. So, but the brushes with the modeling liquid basically changed my direct composite world when I started using them, I think in 2015, probably. I think in 2015, Stefan Braunert posted a video before the IDS, how he used the brush on a video, and everybody in the internet on Facebook was going crazy. Really, I need this brush and we need to buy it. And it's still a great brush. Have you ever found an alternative to this brush, Serhat?
Unfortunately, Sable brush is unique material when I'm doing layering, when I'm doing freehand. I couldn't find any alternative, as you mentioned that Kostas is using plastic rubber or rubber tip instruments, the modeling liquid. No, I didn't try anything next. I think the best material for this layering technique is sable brush with the modeling liquid. I didn't try any other material.
Have you ever used the brush, Kostas?
I have. I do run the Phantom Head course for the training specialists at King's London, King's College London, where I teach, and I'm responsible for teaching off the freehand and the injection molding. So we have the full support of GC with the modeling liquids and the brushes. The brushes are amazing. I mean, they're small enough to be rigid, but they get into places. They're not very flexible. They're just right. I mean, okay, then my nurse kind of loses them because she thinks they're just rubbish. So I like, oh, what do you do with them? But yeah, the modeling liquid is actually changed the game because it makes things to sculpt exactly as you want to sculpt them. There is no element of stickiness. And even if you use kind of metal instruments, or titanium instruments or whatever, that modeling liquid is great. Actually, the modeling liquid, I use it for injection molding too.
Really?
since you asked me about the modeling liquid, very briefly, when I put my Teflon tapes on the alternate teeth and I have to protect them from etching gel and G Premier Bond, the Teflon tape, sometimes it goes away, or if the suction comes, it will pull it away. And if you just wet it, it's not enough. So I just paint a little bit of modeling liquid on the Teflon, which has enough weight and enough surface tension to just make it stick on the tooth. So I always get my modeling liquid out, even for injection molding. But I'm just kind of, it's a small joke. But yes, it's the freehand will always be kind of the king. And yeah, I do like the brushes, but for the proximal areas, still using some very fine metal flat plastics. But that's just the way I learned freehand from my mentor in Geneva.
But when we talk about freehand, we might have to talk about also that sometimes we, of course, have a Pelotonist stand we're using, that sometimes we even might have a wax up that we're using. I mean, said, are there any cases where you built it really from the ground up freehand without any stands, or which times are you using a Pelotonist stand for sure?
You mean the types of stands that I'm using for directs? I'm using putty, just putty without the light body. That works fine, but you need to be careful while you are taking the impression. If you are experienced with that material and you don't have any problems on the palatal aspect of your restoration, and later on I do layer the enamel shell, enamel composite, in order to prepare the palatal shell, and I sometimes use sable brush with the modeling liquid. So that makes your work more efficient.
Have you ever seen, Sehat, on Facebook where some people are not using palatal stents, okay, but they even use buccal stents?
Yeah, it is possible to go completely freehand without any stents, without any impression. I do it. But it means that finally, you need to work carefully on the palatal aspect, which means you need to work with the mirror. I don't like to work with the mirror. Actually, I want to spend less time on the palatal part of the tooth that I restore. So I use palatal shell technique. But as you said, on social media, on Facebook, you see tons of cases, and they all restore differently. Yes, sometimes I do restore using just miter strip. It's possible to create something similar that you do with the silicone index. It's possible. But if you ask me, golden standard for that is the silicone index, like a putty, or you can also use Exaclear. I don't know what is your opinion, Kostas, about using Exaclear for the...
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's the reason why I got into injection molding about 5 years ago was that in hospital where I teach, we do a lot of tooth wear cases. We were having the whole diagnostic phase, mal design, wax up, mock up, and then we were not able to replicate that. So we were using a PVS palatal stent, but for very severe cases, you have to do the palatal in two steps, because if you're adding 7 millimeters height, the composite at the bottom is not going to set. Mm-hmm. So you introduce like the gingival half, then the coronal half of the palatal, mm-hmm, and then you do the buccal. So each step has to talk to the other one, and you get some lines in between. So that is a small problem. Since I started working with the injection molding, we actually started using Exaclear to do the palatal silicone keys, because you can add it like monolithic, one big lump of composite, 7 millimeters tall or even 1 centimeter tall, whatever, and still cure it in one go. Okay, if it's too deep, then you have the depth issues, but that's very rare. So that actual material, the Exaclear, is not unique for injection molding. It can be used for the stamp technique or what we just described. But you know much more about this, Erhad, because you have mastered the art of the stamp technique on posteriors, which is very applicable to the average general dentist, like single tooth dentistry. Injection molding, the number one indication is erosion and erosive tooth wear on multiple teeth. Lots of palatal surfaces, 6-8 teeth. And instead of breaking your neck and going in there to do the kind of cingulum and the palatal cusp of the upper premolar, this is hard, okay? So that's where injection molding comes and is, let's say, a winner. But I see what Serhat does with Exaclear and is like, wow, man, this guy takes it to the next level. So you use it a lot, Serhat. Tell us, how do you do this stamp technique on the posterior?
Stamp technique on the posterior. It was actually last year that I tried first with the Exaclear. I just tried to copy the occlusal surface of course, after having the rubber dam on the mouth, and then after the rubber dam isolation, you just wait, you know, the setting time of the ExecClear. It is 5 to 7 minutes, and then you get the, you remove the silicone and then wait and do check if it's proper. You need to see the impression you have, if it's covering all the occlusal surface or not. And you need to be careful about its margins. If they, it will be, if you, you need to think about later on, if it will be difficult to place with the, to place the, on the prepared occlusal area, because sometimes the ExecClear stem is very large, so you need to adjust, I mean, you need to trim the sides, maybe using a blade. So you need to shorten in some buccal or palatal parts, maybe the distal extension, in order, and you need to control all these extensions. And it is easy when you work with GC Equa. Equa is great material because it's bulk. You don't need to repeat some space, so you just inject directly without the stamp, and you put the stamp, ExecClear stamp on, and wait, and then you remove. That's it. With the GC Equa, the ExecClear is amazing. But when you work with the resin composite, then you need to be careful about polymerization shrinkage, because you cannot completely fill the cavity in one increment. So you need to be careful to eliminate the risk that it is always shrinking when you are using the composite. So when I work with the composite, so I try to finish firstly distal part, then the mesial part, then the, like, I do not finish all restoration at once. So not only incrementing, but also superficially, I divide the work into 2 or 3 phases. So this is how I work. But if I work with glass ionomer, like a GC Equa, then it's completely very simple. Only bulk material, single increment, and the work is amazing in class ones, not on class two. For sure. Yes. I'm not using this technique for class two, just for class one restorations.
Actually, it's the first time I heard someone using Acura together with ExecClear.
Same for me. I'm learning something here.
You know, Acura is very simple. It looks easy, but modeling the Acura, I mean, creating occlusal surface is difficult. You need to use burrs, you need to use some rubbers or the rotary instruments, or you work with the stamp, and then you're not worried about the final shape. So that's so easy with the stamp technique.
I usually do use the stamp technique with like some flow or some liquid rubber dam and kind of a Teflon, which is a nice idea. I picked it up on Style Italiano. But I found out that usually these flows are never as precise sometimes as I wanted it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if what my experience are with ExecClear so far, it's actually that's super precise. Yeah. So probably depends how the angle of application is in the class one filling.
Actually, you need to be sure about the fit of the silicone before you start the next phase. Before you drill, you need to check the fit of the silicone. If you do not have the exact path of insertion, then finally you cannot place correctly. So you will have completely wrong occlusal surface. So I think the criteria is observing or testing the setting of the silicone stamp on the teeth before you start drilling. What do you think of?
Yeah, I agree. And when I use the ExecClear in the injection molding, the difference is that I don't do it inside the mouth. I do it on a model, which means that I have the ability to put it in a hydro flask. and then it fully polymerizes. Whenever I actually made an exaclear without hydro flask, it was still giving the surface detail. It was not a problem, but it had lots of little air porosities, so I couldn't see through it that well. But when I take an exaclear in order to do posteriors, then I have to cut it a lot, and I have to spend quite a lot of time to allow for the clamp. Whereas when you are doing an exaclear in the mouth, you have to cut it very little because you just did it. It already fit. So that's the reason why kind of I rely on the equator of the tooth for referencing. I cannot rely on soft tissue referencing. For that reason, I haven't found a way for injection molding to work with rubber dam. They are fighting against each other. They are like, exactly. It's like two people in the same room who are like, there's a lot of electricity. So I think that's a disadvantage for injection molding, let's be honest. And if at the front of the mouth, you get away with it, you put Teflons, you put retraction cords, you put kind of Optra gates, and you say, it's all split dam or whatever. But at the back of the mouth, we cannot do adhesive dentistry without isolation. It's like, forget about it. So the referencing is not as good. Whereas anteriorly, I've got excellent referencing, but I'm losing the rubber dam. So that's a disadvantage.
But actually, if I would use exaclear in cases like you're doing, I would for sure go for a split dam technique, if possible, of course, because that's kind of an okay isolation. Because what I'm always worried that the patient is closing the mouth at the wrong time. And that's why I like rubber dam.
Yes, true. Actually, if you think about it, the whole thing about isolation is about 45 seconds from the minute you etch until you hybridize. That is the critical moment. If there's blood and water before or blood and water after, who cares? But for that 1 minute, it needs to be super, super good. Now, yes, the split dam protects from the tongue and the lips, and it's a good alternative, at least for injection molding, absolutely. But we all know that the gold standard is the full dam, which is a bonus for freehand. And also layering. I mean, Serhat is amazing at layering, whether it's a cord or Essentia, just controlling the layers is very important. Okay, now with a new cord, have you found, Serhat, that you don't need that much layering, or you still put a bit of AO2 or some kind of dentin in the back?
Yes, when it's a class 4 case, a fractured central incisor, for example, when more than incisal 1/3 is involved within this fracture, then I usually use an opaque shade like AO1 or AO2 palatally in order to increase the opacity of total restoration. So otherwise, everything will look gray. So whenever I'm using genial series like the previous one, original genial and the new one, the Accord, I'm always using opaque shades if I have a longer fracture in the incisal part of the, I mean, if half of the tooth of a central incisor is fractured, for sure I'm using. But if the fracture is only in the incisal 1/3, yes, there is no need for opaque shades. And about your idea not to use all shades, just single shade with like A1 or A2 shades for single restoration without layering, yeah, I think it's possible. But you need to, there is always a compromise when you use a single shade. Like you don't have the translucent incisal edge. So this is
correct.
This is up to the dentist. If you ask the patients, they do not differentiate whether with the enamel or without, because they do not understand. They do not know. Only we can see with the magnified pictures. But I know some people who are doing dentistry in UK, they are using single shades without enamel, and they are saying edge bonding after alignment is very popular in UK. What do you think, Kostas? using single shade without enamel?
It is, because a lot of people in this country, in the UK, yes, they will move the teeth, then they will bleach the teeth, and then they will do very small additions, which has its limitation because volume of composite, surface area, and it has to be a pretty opaque single shade, because if we take a Vita one or an enamel one, it's going to look gray. I mean, exactly. We have all done that. So it works in high value cases because you bleach the teeth, they are B1 plus, so you take a dentin shade, you put it on the incisal edge, and the whole tooth is super dense, super opaque anyway. So you get away with it. But if you use a conventional Vita-based system, it's going to look great. But for the high-value cases, it actually does work. Now, for the monolithic, like monoshade kind of injectable cases that I do, the A1s and the A2s are going to be a bit more glassy, and they're going to show the line, if you will. We all know what I mean by the line. Whereas the B1 and the BW, or the XBW, if you're that crazy.
You mean they are opaque?
They're opaque and they block things out. How much thickness do they need? They don't need a lot. They need about half a millimeter or 0.7 millimeter buccolingually. They block out that line. So whenever you're going on the high value cases, you have an advantage. But when you're going for your tooth wear patient who is not aesthetically driven, that's where the AO2 comes out. So I still do injection molding, but I will do a little bit of freehand AO2 looking at the wax up so that I don't go beyond the wax up, otherwise my stent won't sit. So I will block out the glassy edges with a bit of AO2, give that density, and then the A1 genial injectable will come on top. Because if it was only going to be A1 or A2, it's a more glassy material. We all understand that.
In this case, you're using the AO1, AO2 freehand before you inject.
Yes.
Okay. Correct. This is maybe called semi-injection technique. Semi-direct.
It's called cheating. But we learn from our mistakes. I mean, that's every person who does composites has done all the mistakes in the world. So you're saying to yourself, okay, next time, let's not do that. So the AO2 is an amazing material. Last year, when AO1 came out, I think it was quite recent that AO1 came out. I'm not sure if it was available before.
It was available in the past series of the GC Genio. You could get AO1 and AO2.
Maybe on the injectable it wasn't. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed it. For the AO2 is super valuable. It's like always there as your backup because you need to block things out. And that opaque dentin is amazing.
It's an interesting direction where it's going now.
Once I tried injection molding technique on a very young patient, something like 6 or 5 years in age, with a pediatric dentist friend of mine in her clinic. We tried this technique with monoshade layering. And as Costa said, we had a problem. Like it was not possible to block the margin by using monoshade. So later we thought that our mistake was not to place an opaque shade on the margin, as Costa as mentioned now. And if we had tried that AO1 or AO2 there, just to block the margin, so we could not have, in that case, a demarcation line. So I totally agree with Costa. Using this AO1 or AO2 could possibly increase the quality of the restoration. I think it will improve the aesthetics.
It helps a lot. I mean, especially for normal value cases, A3s, A2s, A1s, for high value, it's easy. You get away with anything. You can use MD from Essentia and it's going to look perfect on the incisal edge because it's such a high value case. But basically with this AO2 business, you make the tooth a little bit longer by adding a bit of AO2 and then you rely on the facial addition. So my nurse always gets the AO2 out. It's like on standby waiting. So it's not true injection molding monoshade, but you kind of, that's why I think injection molding is like driving an automatic car. You have to know how to drive manual. And if you are lazy like me, you can buy an automatic car, but the license is going to be manual. And it takes 20 years. At least for me, Serhat probably, he was born with the skills. But it took me 20 years to learn the freehand skills. And now I don't use, I go injection molding.
Actually, that's kind of nice closing words with the driver's license. Actually, you two guys are really great. I think the lecture you're doing will be a lot of fun. Serhat, at the end, one surprise I promised you. Ooh. You did a podcast with the Dental Hacks podcast in 2015.
Yes.
And because I kind of followed you, I kind of listened to your podcast. It was really interesting. I will put it in the show notes about how you evolved, became a dentist, went to the army and everything. But the funny thing is actually that this was my first time when I actually listened to any dental podcast. And I kind of started listening to dental podcasts so much that I started even my own. So it's actually kind of your fault that we are now on the podcast. It's kind of cool that such a small dental world and with your inspiring cases, even a dental podcast came into place.
That podcast was recorded for the American dentist. You know Dental Town?
Yeah,
they are a group of dentists in North America, especially in the United States. They asked me to be involved in that podcast with an UK dentist, Andrew Chandrapal and Arthur Walker. He's a good friend of mine. He's very active in New York and United States. And we did it together at the, in 2015. So it's interesting that you listen to my podcast. Oh, very interesting.
Well, we'll never go away.
Okay.
That makes you feel better now, Serhat. You inspire the world of podcasts.
What do you remember? When did you listen to my podcast? What do you remember?
It was 2015, actually, yeah. I listened to your podcast.
You still remember?
Because, I mean, I don't remember all of it, but some details. And I also remember that it was with Arthur Volker because he posted it on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, a podcast with Serhat. I mean, it was the times where you had your Trukey study club and you didn't have a website for it. Nobody knew what it was in Europe, actually. But it was an interesting time back when there was no dental Instagram. Now we have even dental Instagram. And you're kind of, it's interesting. A lot of people who were kind of successful in dental Facebook never made the switch to dental Instagram, but you're one of the rare guys who kind of made the step to dental Instagram as well.
I think Instagram is very active in my region, in Istanbul and Turkey and like neighboring countries. It's very active. I don't know if it's that popular in UK. I don't know.
Are they? It is very. It is. If you're not there, nobody counts on you. It's like, it's almost like a must to have a presence, even if you're not that active, just to be there for people to find you. Because if a patient, a customer doesn't see you there, they're going to think, ooh, something's wrong with them. So it kind of has a strong effect. It has a strong effect.
Especially in new generation, in young dentists.
Yes, of course. Of course, needless to say that.
They do not follow Facebook. They think only people over 45 or 50 are just following Facebook, including me. Yeah, I'm almost 47. But I switch completely, not completely, but let's say I'm not posting so often on Facebook. I love posting on Instagram because it's very simple. It's a new style and it's very popular. And you have good contact with the others, especially with the dental friends. Or you can use Instagram differently, like marketing your business. But I don't do Instagram in that way. I prefer to have contact with my dental friends. But it's really versatile. I mean, you can create a different kind of marketing your business on Instagram.
True.
What do you think?
Yeah, but yeah, actually, I mean, Germany, it's not that popular yet from the patient point of view, I think, but it's getting a lot of attention that you kind of interact with your local neighborhood, trying to be recognized. And there are some dental accounts who are like more like dental mindset accounts, not really clinical. They don't post a lot of clinical things, just this mindset things. I personally don't like that how dentists are talking about how to be successful, because I always want to see if I would like their cases and then they can tell me how they be successful. But that's, I mean, actually, Costas has kind of the right balance. It's like kind of for patients, you can kind of see that the content is great.
I know. I mean, I'm aiming to target exclusively patients, but it's like an addiction that, I can't resist and just put a little bit of a deep margin elevation. It's like the patient is like, what is deep margin? So because we speak the same language, we love what we do, we're passionate, we have WhatsApp groups, we have Facebook groups, we have this. So even if the strategy is for patients only, you kind of go to the right and the left all the time. Yeah, that's how things are these days. Podcasts and Instagram. But I hope today was fun, to be continued on stage end of November.
I will look forward for this lecture. Okay, guys. Thank you for joining me on your Friday night. Thank you that you two made it possible. It's really a pleasure to talk to you and see you in person soon again.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Bye.